Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Before we begin, I'd like to draw your attention to a new show I recently discovered, another podcast called the History of Scotland podcast. As the name suggests, it is a podcast about the history of Scotland. And if you're interested in this show, if you enjoy this show, I'm certain you'll also get a lot out of this History of Scotland. As you can imagine, there's a lot of crossover between the history of Anglo-Saxon England and the history of Scotland. I touched on it a little bit briefly in the Northumbrian series, but this show offers a much more in-depth, obviously Scottish-centric view of things that is just really fascinating and presented in a really interesting and compelling way. And I think as I said, if you enjoy this show, I'm certain you'll get a lot out of that. So that is the History of Scotland podcast, available on all platforms. And also, if you want to support this show, then as usual, leaving a like, comment, rating, subscribe, review on whatever platform you're using is extremely helpful. If you're able to, you can also support us on Patreon, and we also now have an Instagram account. Anything and everything you can do is greatly appreciated and helpful. What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 24, Coenwulf, the Last Mercian Overlord. King Coenwulf of Mercia, like Athelbald, tends to be somewhat overshadowed by Offa. Offa was such an enormous figure and attempted to bring about such huge changes in the way things were done in Mercia, that it's inevitable that those who immediately preceded and followed him would be eclipsed somewhat by him. Coenwulf, though, like Athelbald, was a successful king by the standards of the time, and while he didn't achieve as much long-lasting fame as Offa, he nevertheless is worthy of study in his own right. However, it's also true that Coenwulf was the last Mercian overlord of southern England, and that the Mercian supremacy, which began under Penda in 633, crumbled after Coenwulf's death in 821. This was, though, as we'll see, not primarily due to Coenwulf himself, despite what later historians claimed. Coenwulf was a distant cousin of King Offa. He claimed to be descended from another brother of King Penda, named Kenwael. Who this was, though, is hotly debated. It is possible, indeed it's been suggested by several scholars, that it was Kenwael, King of Wessex, who was Penda's brother-in-law, but who angered the Mercian king by repudiating his wife while their children were still young. The children then probably returned to Mercia with their mother, so it is likely that Coenwulf, if he was one of them, was raised in Mercia despite having a West Saxon father. If he wasn't a descendant of Kenwael of Wessex, then probably this Kenwael, who is otherwise unattested in the primary evidence, much like Eowa, was just another Mercian noble, and his sons another noble line in the Mercian kingdom. Either way, being a descendant of Penda and thus a potential claimant to the throne was a dangerous thing to be regardless of who exactly your father was, and this was probably the same for Coenwulf as it was for Offa and Athelbald before him. It seems that Coenwulf's early life followed a fairly similar trajectory to Athelbald's and Offa's. He is totally invisible during Offa's reign. He didn't witness any of Offa's charters, indicating that he was probably a victim of Offa's centralising tendencies. Like so many other Mercian kings, this means he probably spent the years before his reign as a political exile. According to Alcuin, this bloody streak of Offa's reign was ultimately the undoing of his grand ambitions. Offa was succeeded in 796 by his son Egfrith, the Egfrith who he had officially anointed as his heir during his reign. But Egfrith himself only reigned for a few months before dying in the same year. No traditions of foul play survive. It seems that Egfrith's death, like Offa's, was natural. But Alcuin, in a letter, chalked this up to the fury of God against the crimes of Offa, by which he had secured the throne for his son. These crimes probably included Coenwulf as one of their victims. With the throne empty and no obvious heir, it seems that Coenwulf was the obvious choice to succeed, given his distant kinship to Offa. We cannot know if there was any violence around his accession, the chronicles and records of the time don't record any, but it wouldn't be surprising given the trend of Anglo-Saxon royal history that we've seen so far. When he became king, in 796, Coenwulf had an unenviable position on his hands. While Offa had sought to centralise control in an imperial system, his power had still been at its core personal. And with both Offa and Egfrith gone, the kingdoms of southern England that had found themselves under Mercian control, such as Kent and East Anglia, reasserted their independence. Coenwulf set about reasserting Mercia's position, but he had to do so extremely carefully. Coenwulf's relations with Northumbria and Wessex were seemingly complicated by the death of kings with personal ties to Offa. At the same time as Offa and Egfrith died, King Ethelred of Northumbria was murdered and succeeded by Eardwulf, as discussed in episode 17 of this podcast. Ethelred had been married to one of Offa's daughters, and thus presumably enjoyed Mercian backing. Since Eardwulf was a bitter enemy of Ethelred's, the Mercians probably saw him as a threat, and thus supported attempts to remove him by backing pretenders to the Northumbrian throne, and by giving sanctuary to Eardwulf's enemies. This culminated in 801, in Eardwulf's leading an invasion of Mercia, which was settled only through arbitration by bishops. Although an explosive event, this was the only instance of open hostility between Mercia and Northumbria during Coenwulf's reign. This probably wasn't due to any growing affection between the two kings. Rather, it can probably be chalked up to Northumbria's becoming so racked by dynastic struggle in the following decades that it became incapable of defending itself, let alone threatening anyone else. Relations with Wessex were somewhat more peaceful, but nevertheless tense. The king at the time of Coenwulf's accession was Beortric. He was married to one of Offa's daughters, and had always been an ally of the Mercian king. This alliance seemingly continued under Coenwulf until Beortric's death in 802. He was succeeded by Egbert, a man who, under Offa, had fled into exile at Charlemagne's court. He was no friend to the Mercians. He never engaged them in outright warfare, but he was fiercely independent, and prevented Coenwulf from achieving complete overlordship of southern England throughout his reign. When we expand the picture to consider Coenwulf's dealings with all the kingdoms of southern England as well as those of Wales, the image emerges of a very canny king, extremely cautious in the face of potential danger, but nevertheless ruthless in pursuing his goals. His ruthlessness can be seen particularly in his dealings with the Welsh, the East Angles, and the East Saxons. From around 816, we know he waged constant, or near-constant, war with the Welsh, as was becoming customary at this time for Mercian rulers. In East Anglia, numismatic evidence, that is, the evidence of coins, suggests that the East Anglians briefly regained their independence following Offa's death, when a mysterious new king called Eardwald began to mint his own coins without any reference to Offa, or to the Mercian kings in general. But this was seemingly crushed by Coenwulf around the year 805, when he took control of the East Anglian mints and began minting his own coins in East Anglia, Eardwald completely vanishing from the record. Similarly, the East Saxons seemingly regained their independence for about a decade, between the abdication of their Mercian-friendly king in 798 and 811, after which point they begin to witness Cohenwulf's charters, first as sub-kings of the East Saxons, but then undergoing a gradual decline in rank until they become simply Dux by 814. Cohenwulf's caution, though, is reflected in his dealings with Kent. Kent became an independent kingdom again after Offa's death, under a man named Eadbert Praen, who had been an exile in Charlemagne's court, presumably an exile from Offa. Upon returning to Kent and becoming king, he drove out the pro-Mercian Archbishop of Canterbury, Athelherd, when he took control of the throne of Kent. Cohenwulf desperately wanted to remove Eadbert, but he was anxious to do so without papal approval, probably given Eadbert's ties to Charlemagne. And so, in a letter to Pope Leo III, Cohenwulf alleged that Eadbert had previously been ordained a priest, and thus was unable to become a king. This argument was successful and led to Eadbert being excommunicated in 798. With this, Cohenwulf invaded. He captured Eadbert and had him blinded and mutilated, and then established his brother Cuthred as King of Kent, who would often witness charters alongside his brother as the King of Kent, Cohenwulf being the King of Mercia. When Cuthred died in 807, Cohenwulf then assumed direct control of Kent, which lasted until his death in 821. Thus, Cohenwulf re-established Mercian supremacy in the south through a mixture of diplomacy and brute force. A major difference, though, between his own supremacy and that of Offa was that he wasn't able to win over the West Saxons and the Northumbrians into being, if not allies, at least friendly to his regime. This inevitably placed limits on how much Cohenwulf could do. Certainly he couldn't be as audacious as Offa. But in his dealings with the smaller kingdoms, he nevertheless clearly kept alive the flame of overlordship. Indeed, he was seemingly so taken by his successes that in at least one charter, he styled himself emperor, the first Anglo-Saxon king to do so before the 10th century. Even Offa, despite attempting to create a Mercian empire, never went so far as to call himself emperor. This one fact reflects Cohenwulf's elevated opinion of his own position. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day. Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries any time of when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off. But there was one other issue remaining from Offa's reign that had to be dealt with, the problem of Lichfield. As we discussed in the last episode, Offa established Lichfield as a third archbishopric due to his contentious relationship with Janbert, Archbishop of Canterbury. Cohenwulf clearly did not support this settlement, probably because it left his southern English domain divided between two archbishoprics. In 803, he convened a council at Cloversoe to abolish the Archbishopric of Lichfield. But he also did not actually support restoring Canterbury. It was now clear to him that Kent would go into revolt at the slightest provocation, and thus endanger Mercian control of the church. In his letter to Pope Leo III, the same one in which he set out the case for Eadbert's excommunication, Cohen-Wolfe also argued that both Lichfield and Canterbury should be abolished, and the southern archiepiscopal see be moved to the Mercian city of London, and be filled by the exiled pro-Mercian archbishop. Leo reacted negatively to the implied criticism of his predecessor's support for the Lichfield endeavour, and insisted that the archbishopric remain at Canterbury. This set the stage for Cohen-Wolfe's fractious relationship with the church, which would dominate the later years of his reign. Although Athelhaird was a loyal servant, Cohen-Wolfe fell out publicly with his successor Wulfred, specifically over the issue of lay control of church lands. The animosity between the two was already strong in 808, when in a letter from Pope Leo to Charlemagne, the Pope mentioned that Cohen-Wolfe had not yet made peace with Wulfred, implying that the two had fallen out. The disagreement over the control of church lands, though, didn't become obvious, at least not publicly, to all until 816, when Wulfred presided over a council at Chelsea, which attacked lay control of religious houses. The council asserted that Cohen-Wolfe did not have the right to make appointments to nunneries and monasteries, although both Leo and his predecessor, Pope Hadrian I, had granted Offa and Cohen-Wolfe this right. The council seems to have been initiated by Cohen-Wolfe's recent appointment of his daughter, Croenthryth, to the position of the abbess of Minster in Thanet. Pope Leo's successor, Pascal I, rejected Wulfred's arguments and confirmed Cohen-Wolfe's privilege, but this did not end the dispute, and it quickly escalated to the stage where Wulfred was barred from performing his archiepiscopal duties. This occurred around 817, since in that year Wulfred witnessed two charters in which Cohen-Wolfe granted land to Denebert, Bishop of Worcester, but there's no further record of Wulfred acting as archbishop for the rest of Cohen-Wolfe's reign. One account records that the quarrel between Wulfred and Cohen-Wolfe led to Wulfred being deprived of his office for 6 years, with no baptisms taking place in England during that time, but this may have been an exaggeration, with 4 years being more likely. Either way, it seems that Wulfred was prevented from acting as archbishop during the final years of Cohen-Wolfe's reign, on account of his dispute with the king. Cohen-Wolfe died in 821, and to later historians, the death of Cohen-Wolfe was the beginning of Mercian decline. This was caused, they said, by an event which occurred shortly after Cohen-Wolfe's death. His infant son, Cynehelm, often referred to by the writers of the time as Cenelm, was chosen as king and entrusted to the care of Cohen-Wolfe's daughter, Croenthryth, she who was the abbess of Minster in Thanet. During this time, and possibly on her orders, the infant Cenelm was taken into the woods and decapitated. Cenelm, the legend goes, had a dream of his death the night before, and when the moment came he accepted it with joy by singing the liturgical hymn the Te Deum. Cenelm was buried initially in an unmarked grave, but his soul as a dove flew to Rome and gave a scroll to the Pope detailing where he was buried. The Pope ordered an investigation, and the body was found and taken to Winchem, a monastery founded by Cohen-Wolfe earlier in his reign, and at which Cohen-Wolfe was buried. After the discovery and burial of Cenelm's body, Croenthryth died a horrible death, and Cohen-Wolfe's brother Ceolwulf became King of Mercia. This legend was only recorded in the late 10th century, and it seemingly has little historical truth behind it. Cynehelm, who in the legend was said to be 7 years old at the time of his father's death, was seemingly 12 years old in the year of his father's accession in 798, and thus he was about 35 when his father died in 821. Croenthryth, as we've said, was also abbess of Minster in Thanet, and was never entrusted to the care of her brother. Cynehelm may well have been murdered after his father's death, certainly he doesn't seem to have become king. But for later historians, after the cult of Cenelm became established at Winchem, and became one of the most popular of saints' cults in Anglo-Saxon England, the murder of Cenelm was seen as the final nail in the coffin for Mercian domination, since God would never allow such an evil kingdom as would kill an innocent child to remain dominant. As said though, this was a later legend, and doesn't seem to have much to do with the actual history. While the suggestion of divine punishment for the murder of Cenelm should be treated with suspicion, It is true that Cohenwulf was the last king of the Mercian supremacy. I've already pointed out that in some ways Cohenwulf's domination of southern England was less firm than that of his predecessors, but his successors would fail to reach the levels that even Cohenwulf had achieved, let alone the same kind of success that the Mercians had enjoyed since the days of Penda. In their place, Wessex would begin its rise to dominance that would one day result in the creation of the Kingdom of England. In the meantime, Mercia would, like Northumbria, be torn apart by internal disputes and encroaching Norse raiders. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. If you have, I would like to request that you leave a like, or a comment, or a subscribe, or a 5-star rating, or a review on whatever platform it is you use. It all helps us with the algorithm and get more eyes on, or rather, more ears on the podcast. If you're interested, we also have our Patreon, which really helps us to keep the show going, and we now also have an Instagram account. Again, I also want to give a shout out and recommend to you all the History of Scotland podcast. It's extremely interesting. I'm certain if you really enjoy this show, then you'll get a lot out of this podcast as well, since there's a lot of crossover between the history of Scotland and the history of Anglo-Saxon England. So once again, that is the History of Scotland podcast, available wherever podcasts are found. But once again, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and this has been the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Hello everyone, my name is Tom Kearns and I host the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, where I cover the history and culture of England from the departure of the Romans in the 5th century to the Norman conquest in 1066. So far we've surveyed the collapse of Roman rule in Britain, the migration of the Anglo-Saxons, and the history of Northumbria from its beginnings in the mists of legend to its destruction at the hands of Viking raiders in the 9th century. I hope you'll come and give it a go.